This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Dude, I still, like, I was just telling Yanni about this. Like, Colorado's a weird, like, from a hunting perspective, is a weird state.
How so?
I'll tell you why. Okay. One, it's just a weird place, right? Because here, well, I'll get to the run into some old hippies out in the woods later. So there's like that kind of stuff. But the main, and I'll talk about that part of it. The main thing that's weird to me is that you could have such like hodgepodgey land ownership issues. Where it's just like such a weird mixture of little teeny bits of public and teeny bits of private, and it's real messy.
And public inside private.
Yeah, it's messy. And that there are so many people hunting.
Well,
and
over
so
the
many
counter
people
bolt
just out recreating out in the woods. But then, which is not normal, that's not weird at all. Like, that's just like normal, right? That's, you'd find that anywhere. Like, confused land ownership and shitloads of people is like readily available in the United States of America. But you could have that, but also just have huge, giant freaking bucks running around everywhere.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
like, how?
Because it's just good habitat everywhere you look. I mean, from, you know, the entire western two-thirds of the state is just mule deer habitat.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, you know, our buddy Jay's been checking out that new ranch down in, like, South Central, and it's a big ranch, and he feels like there might be, like, it's like a 40,000-acre ranch, and he feels like there might be 50 mule deer on the whole place. Poor habitat. So yeah. Not quite the whole state, but, like, Central, Western, Northwestern, Northern, you know, a lot of mule deer habitat. You keep saying as we drive around, you're just like, I can't believe it. Every direction you look, you feel like there's just a great patch of woods that would hide mule deer.
Yeah, when you get up on a high spot, you look anywhere. It's just like all mule deer. It's like all mule deer country.
Yep.
Full of dudes looking for deer.
But I'll tell you what,
not true.
But they don't get them all. There's still giant. The fact that I spent, I don't know, 15 years trying to find a big buck in Montana. Maybe not 15, a ton of years trying to find like a, just like a buck where you look and go like, holy shit, that's a big mule deer.
You don't got to think about it.
It's hard in Montana.
Yeah.
Then you get like somehow like in Idaho and Colorado.
And if you
see them every day.
But we talked about this, like Montana runs that late season and they're easy to kill on November 20th, you know?
Yeah.
November 25th, whatever it might be.
So, yeah, I would say when it comes to growing big, huge, giant bucks, if that's your goal, and I don't know, and I'm not saying it should be, because I like the Montana system. You get a general tag, so you just go down to the gas station and buy your hunting license if you live there, or online if you don't, and you got, what, 5-6 weeks to hunt, including...
Plus 5 or 6 weeks of archery if you want it,
yep.
You know?
It's like, have at it, son. Go hunting. Including the rut.
Yep.
So, and I'm sure there's like genetic factors and habitat factors and severe winters and all that kind of stuff is playing into it too. But yeah, you can't be letting every Tom, Dick, and Harry go wandering around out in the woods during the mule deer rut and think that you're going to have bucks growing to be old, big, old, huge bucks. And I don't really care because, you know, in that they manage for opportunity.
Yeah.
They manage for opportunity. Colorado like isn't short on opportunity, but you get a week to hunt, not 6 weeks. You get a week.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got to pick your season.
And whatever they're doing, it's just, man.
Remember too, I think
big old bucks. I'm on a streak.
I'm just glad
most of these units around here only have a couple hundred of these buck tags.
Some units way less.
That's the thing. Yeah. I think they should make a rule that you need to wear a certain kind of hat, a certain kind of orange hat, or a certain kind of flag on your hat if you're hunting elk, and a certain kind of flag on your hat if you're hunting mule deer. Because if I'm hunting mule deer, in my head, everybody's hunting mule deer. So anytime I see orange, which there is plenty to look at, like orange, blaze orange off the, you know, on the other side of the valley or canyon from you, I look and I'm like, that son of a gun, he's hunting mule deer. But I'm like, he's probably hunting elk. And if he had a little flag system, then you'd know who you were hated and who you didn't really hate.
Who you could go talk to and say, hey, I noticed you're elk hunting. You see any big bucks around?
Yeah, and I could be like, just so happens, I was looking at a couple bulls mm-hmm. that once I started doing a little map reading, I realized those bulls are on public land. And I'll tell you about it if you tell me about the bucks you've seen. But if a guy's hunting mule deer, I'm not going to go talk to him because I'm going to lie to him. He's going to lie to me, and no one's going to get anything out of that. He'd be like, see any bucks? You? Nope.
Damn, this unit sucks.
Saw a little one 2 miles off.
Yeah, so I went back toward the truck. So, all right, we got to back up now. We got to get into Yanni's, how he's dying. And
we got to get into that, huh?
You don't want
to
cover that?
No, we can. I'm comfortable covering it, yeah. But you should introduce your guests.
Yeah. So, Yanni. Yanni, the Laveen Eagle, Putellus, and Brody Henderson. Say something for yourself, Brody.
I love big bucks.
Yep, and you cannot lie. Brody Henderson, who lives not terribly too far from here. That's vague.
Yeah.
Lives not terribly too far from here.
We're nowhere near the I-70 corridor this year.
No, and Brody lives in the land of big, giant bucks. But we're not even near there.
No.
Just to make sure you understand that we're not at Brody's, we're sitting in a little log cabin that is not owned by Brody. And if Brody lived by here, we'd be sitting in his house.
That's right.
So think about that before you try to get all sneaky figuring out what's going on. But we come down here. I have a mule deer tag. And we're down here me and Yanni are down here taking care of various pieces of business. And got a few days. We had how many days to hunt? Three. Four.
Four.
It was supposed to be four.
You missed one.
Missed one. If Yanni wants to talk about how that happened, he can go ahead, but I'm not even going to get into that. A paperwork problem. Forgot some paperwork at home. Important pieces of paperwork having to do with whether or not you're allowed to go hunting or not. So lost a little time there. And then go out on and we get into our zone and go out on the evening hunt. And we have a friend who's been hunting this area for a long time. And this friend's got a spot he hunts. He hunts a ranch primarily in some public land that comes up against his ranch, but he's hunting there. And we're not wanting to crowd him. And he knows the area pretty well. And so he throws us a couple tips about what we ought to be doing. And as a nice gesture too, he actually hikes back into a little glass and tit he likes and does a prelim check before we show up. And he goes up there and finds 15 does from this glass and tit. This guy's strategy, and he's a very successful big giant buck hunter. This guy's strategy is Brody, can you explain the first, second, third, fourth and all that?
Yeah, so Colorado has four different rifle seasons. First rifle season usually runs somewhere like October 10th through the 15th. That's elk only.
Then it's 5 days long.
Five days. Then there's second season, which starts a week after the end of first rifle.
Mm-mm. Days.
No, that one's only a couple days.
Yeah, that's right. It ends on a Wednesday, and the next one picks up on Saturday.
So that one runs 9 days. Then there's a week gap between second and third, and third usually runs somewhere around the first 9 days of November-ish, somewhere right in there. And then fourth season picks up a couple days after third rifle ends, and that's a five-day season.
But there's all, like, to help people understand that, because they might be thinking, like, oh, so you can only hunt 1 week. Talk about all the tags you have and what they're all good for.
I had a third season buck tag, so I killed a buck a few days ago.
Nice buck too.
Yep, pretty good one. And then I have a fourth season bull tag, which starts next week. and then I have a late season cow tag, which that runs for a month, like December 15th to January 15th.
And then you're walking around the black bear tag that's good for like a whole long time.
Right. That they have this like the they just changed this a couple of years ago. You can buy an over the counter with caps, which means there's X number of over the counter bear tags available. And if you have, say you have a buck tag for third rifle season, and you buy one of those over-the-counter bear tags, that bear tag is actually good for all four rifle seasons in the unit you have a deer or elk tag for.
Huh.
And then there's a separate like rifle bear season basically the whole month of September, which is a different tag.
And then did you do your mountain lion certification so you're a certified mountain lion hunter?
I did. I'm going to pack a mountain lion tag around during that late season cow tag hunt. Who knows, maybe I'll see one.
So the third season, if we're just focusing on mule deer here, well, elk are rutting during first and second.
First, they're like the tail end of the rut would be during first rifle.
Okay.
Mule deer, third rifle mule deer is like what I would call like pre-rut.
Yes.
Cuss, like real close to the actual rut.
And fourth, which there aren't that many, like fourth season mule deer tags are hard to come by.
Yes.
Because it's rut.
Yep. And they don't issue very many. They're very tight with those.
Yeah, it might be like instead of being 200, it might be like, what, 10 to 25?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I'm going to set my sights for, is saving up enough points to get a fourth season.
That would be like hunting in Montana for big bucks on November 20th.
Yes.
You know?
So anyhow, this guy that gives us some intel, some hunting info, he really likes to hunt the third season. And the third season, depending on the weather, can be like real rutty. His hunting strategy, the way he finds mule deer, is he says I hunt does. Now by that he doesn't mean that he's shooting at does. By that he means that he locates every little group of does he can find,
and sometimes big groups of does,
sometimes big groups of does, and wakes up every morning and goes around and checks all those groups of does, because the bucks are like, the does are going to be there in their little configurations, kind of like consistently. But the bucks are like the deck of cards gets shuffled every night. So he checks those does, waiting to see who's going to show up, knowing that these big groups of does, even if they got a little buck with them, he knows that a big buck is going to find those does. So he finds bucks by watching does. He tells us about a little glass and tit that had some does by it, some on public, some on private. Our first night, we go in there and right away find the five does on private. No,
they were on
five does on public. They're only like 150 yards from us. But the stuff around us is like real thick, giant sage. So you could have 300 deer walking around there, but you're not going to see them unless they happen to step in these little teeny openings. But we got some where we know there's some.
You meant to say giant pinyon pine and juniper, right?
No, that sage in the bottom.
That real tall, old sage down the bottom.
That sage is 6 feet high.
Yeah, you're right.
So, but here and there's little grass patches in the sage, and you happen to catch a deer out in one of those, and you just realize, man, there's a million places you could put more deer, and I wouldn't know they were there. So when I say there's five, you don't know really what's going on. There's just five that happen to be mingling around in a grass patch in the middle of all this sage, which hides deer real good. But what we're seeing is lots of deer, lots of elk on the private. And where you're at, it's like, imagine you could shoot a laser at any land feature around you. I would say that 50% of those laser shots are going to hit private land. Like if you had a laser pointer, right? And you're just like, I don't know, there. There's a 50% chance that there is going to be private. And a 50% chance there is going to be public. You agree?
Agree.
And there's a lot of mapping technology out there where you can kind of look at overlays to see what's what. And you realize that from the spot you're looking at, we're looking at deer. We're glassing up a bunch of deer and some elk that are on private land. And we're glassing up deer that are on public, but you would not be able to walk from your public patch to that public patch. Because between there is a big barrier of private land.
Yeah, you couldn't do it in a straight line. You'd have to make a J, and you starting at the point of the J and go backwards first, swing around some private, and then
big
go.
You couldn't do it in that. You couldn't do it in that hunt.
Probably not.
Like in an evening hunt, yeah, but you couldn't because
no evening hunt definitely not.
In an evening hunt, if all of a sudden it gets starts to feel kind of like evening like. Which I always know the minute it happens, just like internally.
The light changes.
It just became evening, I just know, and all of a sudden there's deer. You could feasibly beeline it to them, but you have to go around, get on the road, go out to a highway, and hike in 2 miles to get deer right in front of you.
But if you saw a monster, you could come up with some kind of plan to get there later.
Well, that was our plan.
Yeah.
That we would glass up a biggin', and then the next day go in there and put the sneak out.
Yep.
But what happened was we glassed up a biggin' that was just 100% absolutely like not on public land and wasn't likely to become on public land. He's probably a mile away, right?
Yeah, not for a while.
What do you mean not for a while?
Him coming onto public land.
Oh,
you know?
Well,
he's
yeah.
Probably going to take some sort of change in the weather.
Sure. I mean, what I'm saying is I wasn't going to go and like make that my morning plan.
No.
With a short, yeah, you got a short amount of time.
Because I would need to, I'm trying to explain like this tit that we're on and how this tit that we're on works. Is that the chances of you actually taking a poke from the tit are slim.
Yeah, there was a small piece of public that, I mean, we're almost perched on the edge of the public looking at a lot of private.
Oh, and at dusk, that's right. And at dusk, we glass up another biggin who was very easily walk-toable, but wheeling it by looking at my GPS, we had 460 yards of public in front of us, and that buck was at 640.
Yep,
and not looking in our direction, but going watching does the other direction.
Yeah.
So, and that buck would have been nearly impossible to go after.
Yeah,
there's no way he could have gotten up on a little perch to try to shoot down in there at him. He'd have been very difficult to chase after. Am I setting the stage here?
You are. I think you described the situation well.
And yeah, if you sat there for 7 days on that little
eventually
tit, and you were like, I'm just going to shoot, I just want a meat buck. I'm here for a meat buck. I'm going to sit on this tit. You would probably every couple days get a meat buck.
Yeah, because those does were right there hanging out.
Yeah, it would be like, it would happen.
Spend your whole day. It was frustrating for me when I showed up, because we went back into that spot. I went in with you guys the next morning. Was we were looking at shitloads of deer, but most of them you're like, well, I can't hunt those deer.
Yeah, drives me crazy.
And looking at deer's fun, but
and then you glass up another biggin,
yeah,
that was indisputably on private, yeah, not fixing to leave private.
Yeah,
but we're looking at the public land deer that you would have to go after another day. We were looking at over a dozen.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
With bucks.
Yep.
With meat bucks.
Yep.
But here too, my freezer's jam packed. I'm like, you know, I like to hunt meat bucks, but these last few days I've not been meat buck hunting.
I'm like, you've been okay going home without one.
Yeah, I'm looking for that 1 in 100.
Yeah.
You know, like buck where you're like, "Oh my gosh, look at that buck, like that's the buck that you need to be a like have a special set of circumstances allow you, you know."
Yeah.
That's like the buck you strive to learn how to find, you know. The next morning we go back to the same tit and the same thing happens. Oh, another thing happened that was interesting is at one point I see a deer, like if you're glassing mule deer and observing them, you can tell a lot about what is around those deer by reading their body language. And a lot of times you'll find bucks by watching does, because does are nervous around bucks during the rut. So a lot of times you'll see all the does like just being very fixed, staring into some little hellhole brush patch or something, and they don't like it, and they're always looking in there. And after a while, you might start staring in there with a spot scope and find what it is they're annoyed by, and it's a buck. You find a lot of bucks like that because the does will be up feeding around. They're kind of like more, a little more freewheeling about how they expose themselves and how much time they spend out feeding. And the bucks, they don't get to be big, giant bucks by getting shot. So there's a certain amount of like stealthiness that goes into being a big, giant buck. And I don't think that it's, I think it's a little bit learned. And I think it's a little bit like if they were not that way, they'd be dead. So I think that there's some that just are skittish. Like when you scare a mule deer and the mule deer is running away, 8 out of 10 mule deer are going to stop. If they're going to crest the ridge and be gone, they stop and look back. They're kind of like, do I really need to run this far? Like, is this thing really seriously threatening me? Bucks that do that don't live to be big, giant bucks. Bucks that, like, decide, I'm just going to run over the ridge, never stop running, and run way away from here before I stop.
Or sneak, just creep out of there.
Oh, yeah, or the ones that are really born with a gift don't run with the does.
Yep.
The does book, and they make a big show out of how they're booking, and then they get on the ridge top and stop and look back, but that buck has taken some completely different route through a bunch of like brush without really running, but kind of like trotting along, and he's just like, see you ladies, I'll catch you after dark. Those bucks become big giant bucks. What?
Or the ones that live behind a private fence post for most of their lives.
Yeah. There's different ways. You could probably be a dumb buck who's always out. Yeah. A dumb buck who likes to always be out in an alfalfa field eating. But if there's no hunting, he's going to, yeah, he might be just fine. What I was getting at is I'm watching this doe and I can't figure out why she is looking at. So if you see a doe staring at something, it's like, you know, there's something there that it doesn't like, or it's staring at it. Buck, and she just, but I see this doe with the look of a doe that's like annoyed and concerned about something's presence near her, but she's walking forward like she's walking at her object of interest, and that caught my attention. So I'm staring at her with a spotting scope, and I realize that she's chasing a bobcat. Not chasing it, but like making sure it where it is. I'm keeping tabs on you, just kind of like a old lady like yelling at some neighborhood kid, you know, like following him along, sort of like escorting him out of the area, this bobcat. So that happened.
Big bobcat.
I got a question.
I couldn't judge him. I can't judge way off bobcats.
Have you ever seen mule deer stomp their feet like whitetails do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did she do that at all?
Oh, hold on a minute. Have I? God, I feel like I have.
I feel like they don't, but maybe they do.
Well, they blow. It took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah. But you know how a whitetail dog just stand there and stomp their feet.
Man, I want to say that I've seen them stomp their feet, but the more I think about it, I can't think of an exact. Can you, Yanni? I can't think of an exact. Man. Dude's gonna be writing in like a bat. Dude's gonna be writing in like a bat out of hell about this, man.
I kind of feel like they don't, but we'll find out.
Oh, if they do, it's not as much as whitetails.
I made the mistake one time saying how antelope go under fences and not over. Well, it's some go over fences, right? So people hate. I think there's people that don't like generalities, and there's people that just want to be helpful.
Yeah.
Per se, yeah, antelope like to go under fences.
Yeah, but there's no absolute.
Then you're going to get 10 videos of antelope going over fences.
Yeah.
So Brody has to, after our second, so we did an evening sit on the frustrating, I'm going to call it frustration tit. Did an evening sit on frustration tit. Did a morning sit with Brody, me, Giannis, Brody on Frustration Tip. Brody has a split late morning, mid-morning. And me and Yanni have decided that we're going to travel into a new area. And the land ownership where we are is so screwy that we almost like travel through what I would describe as a channel of public land.
That opens up to a bunch of public.
That opens up to a bunch. But we realized from our tit, from Frustration Tit, we thought we had to go back out, like hike the short hike back out to the road, hop in a rig, go down the road, and re-access. But you get to look, and you're like, there's like a little channel of a narrow wedge of land that you can sort of traipse through to hit
steep stuff.
Yeah, it was not. Yeah, it's not fun walking to get up into a big area of open public and start traipse through there. See a doe and a fawn unit, a doe fawn unit in there. Hike up, get to talking about arrowheads and whatnot. Get up to the top and find a sweet-looking area that you could only hunt with a hot air balloon.
Or still hunting techniques.
Or if you had good, wet ground, you could still hunt it. Because you're always seeing these little, like, 100-yard, 150-yard open aspen patches, but you never are getting, like, the commanding view that I like.
Is that where you saw the moose?
Right there. Yeah, I saw a moose, like... Like
we snuck in on him.
Close enough to shake hands. I couldn't see it. It was like one of those situations where I'm looking at it, but I wasn't like comprehending right. It.
Yep.
I remember, I can never, how's the AFC writer, Tom McIntyre? No.
Yeah.
McIntyre is how he says his name. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to mess his name up. He's talking about hunting, being in Africa one time. And the guide he's with, all of a sudden stopping him. And he's like, you know, there's an elephant. He's like, I look, I can't see an elephant. Like, nowhere I look, I just see trees.
Right.
Tree trunks. And he realizes that.
That's an elephant.
Like, one of the tree trunks. That he's, as he's peering under the brush, like, one of the tree trunks is like a leg of an elephant.
So the moose was just standing still.
Yeah, but yeah, he's like, right there. And I don't know what I was looking for, but I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, the moose standing there. Like, little shit moose.
He was obscured, but.
Saw some rabbit sign, went through some real nice open aspen grovey kind of stuff, entered into just a hellhole where it was a lot more like timber, noisily bushwhacked through this timber.
Yeah, that's some nasty stuff up there.
Didn't like that at all. Squirted a bunch of mule deer out ahead of us. I didn't like that at all. And then... bust out into, and I could see it on my map, bust out into the like most picturesque gigantic sage flat meadow,
like high elevation sage flat.
Yeah, it was like 97.
Yeah,
wasn't it 9,700 feet?
Yeah, something like that.
And the first thing I say is like talk about like a glass is half empty. We're like, holy shit, this is like amazing up here. And I'm like, yeah, but everybody know about this spot. This has got to be like the spot everybody walks to. Look at it. It's amazing. And even though we just kicked some deer out, I'm like all down on it because it looks too good. And if it looks too good, there must be a problem with it.
Mm-hmm. But I think at that point, we were probably getting on to being 3 miles from... the rigs, from a road,
yeah,
from a trail. So,
and that's like straight line miles. There was a lot of up and down.
Yeah. In there.
And we had climbed over 1,000 feet.
So yeah. I was feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, you knew I was being pessimistic about it, about the meadow. We're going to call it the meadow.
It's like an elk and deer playground almost up there. Like it looks perfect.
Yeah, just as a bit of foreshadowing. Yeah. I later had occasion to sleep on that meadow, and I was laying in a bed. I had a sleeping pad. I didn't need it because I was laying in a bed of elk droppings. So we just cross this thing and get to where we're overlooking, and you cross the sage flat, and you wind up overlooking this big canyon that Brody had told us about. Well, had you go up there hunting rabbits, or were you hunting deer?
Up there deer hunting before. And grouse hunting. Rabbits down low, down by where the rig was.
Oh, and he tracked a lion and a bear through there.
Yep. Yeah.
So Brody told us about this bitchin' canyon full of aspens that's good glassing. So we get to the edge of that, and by this time it's like the evening hunt. And I perch up on the edge. And before I even perch up on the edge, I realize there's two deer down below me. And they feed up towards us, and it turns into a three-pack of does, feeds up toward us. I sit down and just start watching for more deer, and pretty soon I pick up 20 does and a nice, not a big giant buck, but a nice buck. And Yanni's like, I'm going to go do a little scout up and down canyon.
Yeah, I just want to make sure there was like no real nice vista that we were missing.
Yeah. Did the weird shooting occasion happen before or after that?
Before.
Were you sitting by me for the weird shooting thing? Yes. Okay, so a little bit of a weird shooting thing. Earlier I was talking about how Colorado's weird and there's always people around. When we're on the edge, when we're on this canyon rim, glassing the bottom of the canyon and the other side, like you could see the other side was like kind of public but mostly private.
Yeah, and canyon might be a little bit misleading.
Big draw.
Because I start to think about Grand Canyon when you say canyon, but there's no real like exposed steep rock cliffs in this canyon. It's just like a steep valley, but it's like there's nowhere where you can't climb down and climb right back up the other side.
Sure, that's
if you're
fair.
Fit.
And you couldn't shoot across it.
Yeah, it's a big one,
too far to shoot across. But right when we get up on our little perch where we're going to start just observing what's going on below us, Yanni picks up two dudes perched up on the opposing canyon wall.
I didn't know that.
Valley wall. Yeah, I told you the story.
Across that big aspen draw.
Across it, but higher up valley than us are two pumpkins. And when I say pumpkins, I mean dudes wearing hunter's orange. There's two pumpkins. Right. And then a while later, we realize there's another pumpkin below them with an orange cowboy hat. And Yanni commented how he has a blaze orange cowboy hat. And I speculated that it might be one of those covers that you can put. I think there's like, I'm like, I said, I bet it's an orange cover. If he has an actual blaze orange cowboy hat, I like that shit a lot.
Yeah. But that's what Steve wears too when he's in Colorado. When you're in Colorado, you wear a big cowboy hat and you put the orange cover over it. That's how we do it.
So,
see, a cowboy hat would have got me thinking about what kind of hunter it was.
Yes. Listen, my friend Ronnie Baim has a maxim. Never wear a hat that has more personality than you do.
Right.
That is why I wear baseball hats.
Yep. Not flat-brimmed baseball hats.
No. Definitely not a flat-brim hat. And I definitely keep my ears outside of the hat band.
How do you feel about these Stormy Cromers that we like to wear?
I was going
to
bring that up. They work well. I don't have that much personality. They work well for you guys. But to stick to Ronnie Baim's maxim, I wear just baseball hats.
See, I feel like the Stormy Cromer is almost a baseball hat. It's real close.
Right? Isn't that how the story goes? It's written on the inside of the hat.
Yeah.
The dude was wearing a baseball hat, but his ears were cold.
And his wife sewed
on an extra flap.
Yeah. They're nice.
Well, I do wear the First Light brim beanie.
Yeah.
Which is a radar hat.
That's like a trimmed down version of a Stormy Cromer.
I have that level of I have the personality to support that hat. I do not have the personality to support a blaze orange cowboy hat.
I just don't.
So there's two guys up high, and we're having a conversation about whether or not these groups, the one man group and the two man group, are affiliated.
Okay, yeah.
Like, are they associates or not? And all of a sudden, blouch! One of them shoots like from his canyon wall, like apparently shooting over to our zone, but not our zone because we're down valley, but he's like shooting from his canyon wall across canyon.
So those guys were like damn near a mile away probably, right?
No, not
that far?
I could have walked over there in 15 minutes.
Half a mile.
Yeah.
And one of them was down low enough down that he could shoot across.
Yeah.
So it's like, blouch! And I'm like, jeez! And I look through my binos, and I can't tell what the cowboy hat dude's doing. He's kind of like fidgeting around in some brush. But the two guys above there are just transfixed with binoculars to their eyes staring cross canyon. Not even budging. And I'm like, they didn't shoot because they couldn't have gotten in the positions they're in that fast. It must have been the lower guy that shot. So I start watching him, anticipating that he's going to, you know, run down, do something dramatic, and like, you know.
Usually a single shot's a good sign, right?
Well, a couple seconds later, he just picks up his rifle and walks back up the hill. Like, no, he didn't go over to check for blood. I don't know. I have no idea what.
Clean miss.
He starts headed up towards the other guys, and I'm like, okay, so they are associates. They drift off and toward the setting sun, and that's when I see a deer coming. I'm like, oh, those jokers are spooking deer, but I realize that's not the case. And out comes this just string of freaking does, and they come out and start feeding. And there's a nice buck and what I later learned was a dinker buck, because they were fighting for a long. The two bucks are fighting for a long time. Yanni goes to take a look around. Tell what happened on your little odyssey.
Yeah. So I left just to see if we could get if there was a better vantage of this Aspen Canyon. And so I you had perched maybe like 10 yards down off the rim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pop back up on the rim and I go, not 50 yards, up canyon, and all of a sudden I'm looking at a doe, and I look to my peripheral, and there's a forked horn, another doe, and probably like a pretty spindly, but I don't know, 2 or 3 year old 4x4, you know, like a buck that gets your attention, but you're like, nah, probably not today, you know. And they kind of see me, kind of don't, and they get close enough where I could have shot with my bow. So it's a nice little encounter,
like a little wildlife moment.
I go farther up. Don't see much else. Don't see a better vista. Turn around, come back, and walk all the way past where Steve's sitting, and start to look over more of the canyon. And so I think I saw, between looking down in the canyon and then doing a little loop, another two does and another forked horn.
And no more mugs.
No mug. Well, so way off in the distance. But I was almost assuming it might have been the same guys that had left, and they had just, you know, done a loop and then popped out lower in the canyon. Because there was another two guys standing
there. You could glass up this over on private. You could glass up this little cabin that had all kinds of trucks parked around. Mm-hmm.
They were headed down canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just as some foreshadowing, boy, did those boys get some shooting in later. Just as foreshadowing. So Yanni comes back. And then,
we got like an hour left when I get back to Steve. It's prime time.
And you say, I'm all geeked out about these does that are way far away. And you say, there's not enough time. Even if we were to find a big giant buck, there's not enough time to put a move on them anyways. Let's take our little bit of daylight.
Look over the backside.
And just do a little, because it's a real nice trail.
Yeah.
Do a little still hunt down this trail, since we know there's a bunch of deer starting to pop up top here. And we're going along nice and easy, and it starts getting like borderline. Find some of the deer again first. Mm-hmm. Find some of the deer you saw again. Keep moving, marveling at how amazing this area is up here. And all of a sudden, spook some deer. It's kind of like borderline too dark, probably like borderline legal, end of legal shooting light, like within minutes of the end of legal shooting light.
Well, I mean, I was watching the clock because I definitely wanted to get to those, like to where I knew we could look over into those sage flats, and we had about 15 minutes left.
And
it's the kind of light with your naked eye. Yeah, you're probably not seeing real well, but you know, with optics, you could cleanly kill an animal. No problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm not talking about whether I could have, because I've been in a lot of situations where you could cleanly kill animals way outside of legal shooting light with optics.
Oh, because of moon or something?
Snow,
moon, yeah. Anyways, we were within.
You got a full moon and snow on the ground. It's like you hunt round the clock.
That's true.
So anyhow, we jump. I hear noise and see flashes of deer. And Yanni runs ahead to try to get a look at him before they get away, and sees.
Yeah, they had kind of bailed off this edge. And so I run down the trail maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 yards, thinking I'll catch him just down below, because I'd have been there just an hour earlier, and there's a big sage flat. Well, this was, you know, now harken back to how we were talking about bucks that grow to be big and old. Is these, there's, I think, a doe and two bucks. I think, again, it's pretty dark. A buck and two does.
Throw in the other buck to explain
no, two
why.
Bucks and a doe.
Two yeah, bucks and a doe.
But in this, talk about the buck who is not a contender to grow into a big old giant buck.
All right, because, well, yeah.
Just throw that in.
I'll come back to him. But these two that quickly put binoculars on, they have already made up probably 200 yards, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Maybe more. And, I mean, they are just flat out. There's no stotting. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically when they prong, when they're hopping.
Bounce.
They are just like flat, ears pinned back, like rumps low, just burning sage. And they're like, I catch them in my binos, and a half a second later, they're into the timber. And I just remember seeing like no antlers, a whole bunch of antlers, and then a little bit less antlers on the rear one. I'm like, holy shit, they're in here. But we just bumped them. Then Steve catches up to me, and we're overlooking the sage flat. He's like, oh, there's another deer, you know? I'm like, yeah, keep looking. Maybe there's more. And, yeah, he's not a contender for getting old because what was he? Was he just a forky one?
Yeah, a forky who's like, eh.
Yeah, what's everybody running for?
How are you guys doing?
He's like, how am I going to get all excited about these guys coming through here with a gun?
Those guys look like trophy hunters.
What could possibly happen to me? So he doesn't have that special little thing.
But maybe it takes time. Maybe that dude will get paranoid.
I tried to add that in earlier that some of it's learned.
Yeah.
You have a handful of your buddies get shot out from next to you, and it probably starts to instill in you some of that paranoia. Then we just take a hike in the walk. Then we take a long hike in the dark. And my only comment on the hike was that throughout the day we'd climbed over a long period of time, quite a long ways. And once you condense it all into just a late night in the dark march down the hill, it seemed like we were traveling downhill longer and farther than I ever imagined we'd gone up. So we did a big loop.
Yeah, you had me worried because it's like, man, took like 2 hours to get down. I'm like,
90 minutes. But we were like practically running down the damn hill, and then we hit the road
and had a ways to hike back,
1.7 miles from the truck.
But when you said it took 90 minutes to get down, I was like, I don't remember ever taking that long to get up.
We got a little turnaround in the dark. Neither of us had ever been here before. It's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not the best trail.
There's a few spots.
Well, you guys did it in the light today, so can you follow it really?
Yeah, but what happens
there's
was,
a couple spots where it.
Yeah.
What happens with trails is, like when you're on a trail, the trail's usually good in the shitty areas, and you get in the good areas, and people just fan out.
Yep.
So every time that trail hits a meadow, people are just like, they kind of scatter, and then you got
to. Yeah, because that's the spot where you can actually talk to your buddy and walk with him.
So, yeah,
right?
Your buddy walks up next to you, and you guys talk about what you're doing. Yeah, and then you got to get to the end of the meadow, and you got to, like, pace around trying to find out how the trail leads.
Yep.
And there's some false trails, and we got off in the dark on a dry wash, thinking we were on a trail, and weren't on a trail. We're on a dry wash. And eventually come down, find a little creek to get some water, because we're out of water. There's 5 270 cartridges laying there. Which I have no idea. Some dude crouched down to get some water and dumped out his pocket full of ammo. I don't know. 5 270 shells laying there. Looked like Remington core locks.
Were they still there when you came back?
Yep. I stuck them all nose into the mud and made like a little installation art with them in the mud. Except some guy with a horse must have kicked them over because three of them were laying off. But they're still there. Hit the road. And then Yanni walks. It was 1.7 miles and gets the rig and comes back and fetches me. Now, we're staying in a little cabin. And we make a plan. We set our alarms for 3:45 a.m. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Brody, you were going to come and meet us.
Yep.
And...
No, you weren't. You had bailed. You had to take the kids in.
Oh, that's right.
No, he had bailed.
Yeah.
Set our alarms for 3:45 a.m. so that we can get back up in the zone before it gets light out. Up on our perch. Canyon perch. But all night, I'm not sleeping well because like Yanni's just rummaging around. And eventually I'm like, what's going on? And he's having like a heart attack.
I wasn't having a heart attack, thank goodness.
But talk about your problem. This is going to wind up being like an episode of Oprah. Because we're going to talk about like you having like a health scare and the triumph of finding out what was going on.
Mm-hmm. But we still, more we like, unfortunately, who's that, we don't
who's
have
that.
Like,
who's that guy that is always like, oh, yo, take some rhubarb extract. It'll cure that.
Garrett?
No, Dr. Oz. No, I'm thinking Dr. Oz. Go ahead. This is like a Dr. Oz episode.
Garrett probably give us some of that tincture that he likes to put on his tongue when he's everybody's sick around him. Yes, I've been dealing with these symptoms for, I don't know, 5 to 15 years. 15 years ago is the first time I remember having something that where I was in Belize with my wife before we got married.
Angling,
doing some bonefish angling, staying at my buddy's place who owns the Blue Water Grill down there on what's that called? Key called?
Ambergris,
yeah. If you're ever down there and it's the only place you need to go eat, go to the Blue Water. And
hold on real quick. Brody, did you used to guide down there?
No, I've just fished down there a bunch. Down there. Yeah.
Brody used to do some hosted trips.
Yeah. Yeah, I hosted.
Did you know?
Some, yep. Down okay. there.
Yeah, so I'd been angling in the hot sun, possibly gotten dehydrated or whatever, and I sort of had a like a fluttering heart feeling, maybe like a missed beat, something along those lines, and I couldn't kick it, and so I ended up going to the doctor down there in Belize, which like was kind of scary in and of itself.
And just because you're in another country.
Yeah.
They speak English, though.
Yeah, and they couldn't really, you know, say what it was. They're like, you should go check it out. They gave me something to calm me down. I was fine. And when I got home, went to get my heart checked out, had the EKG. I can't remember what other tests they ran, and said I was fine. No problems. So like 10 years probably went by. And one night, just wake up in the middle of the night and sort of have like a increased heart rate. And again, sort of this like fluttering heart feeling. And
when stuff's going wrong with your heart, man, yeah, that's got to get your attention.
That in itself, again, is not that. Like, there's no pain associated. It's not scary.
No, but I'm no doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that when your heart stops.
You're an author.
There's a hitch in your giddy-up.
When your heart stops working, that's not good.
No. If you can feel it.
Yeah, so it makes like some like an immense amount of anxiety when you feel that, you know? But there's no, like I said, there's no pain associated with it, you know? It's like, it's funny because I've had a lot of injuries over the years and, you know, I've had both knees blown out and fixed in the last few years and none of that stuff really makes me nervous because you're just like, whatever, it's like bones and muscle and it's like, it ain't going to kill me, right? But when your heart's fluttering, you're thinking, what's next?
Oh, yeah, man.
It might kill me.
Right.
So, but until 2 nights ago, I'd always just calm myself down, walk around, make a phone call to my wife. It's always seemed that sort of like talking to people or engaging somehow sort of takes my mind off of it, and I would get rid of the flutter, you know? Because it would be like every 3 or 4 breaths at the end of an exhale, you just feel like this little like extra doo-doo, just enough to be like, what was that? What the fuck? What was that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And so the other night, it happened twice. We went to bed at like 9 early, and like 10, I wake up, I'm feeling it. I'm like, fuck. Well, Jennifer's at home butchering my deer that I had left her. So she's been sending me texts like, what about this and what about that? So I knew she was up, so I called her. And, you know, so she's chatting me up and kind of talking me down, and it goes away. It's fine. I'm like, all right, cool. I need to get some sleep. We're getting up in like freaking 3 hours or something. So go back to sleep. And at 2 a.m., wake up, same thing. And I don't know still to this day, like what's the, like what caused it? Like what kicks it off, right? We're sleeping in a small cabin. Steve's got too many logs on the fire. It's like a sauna in here. So it's hard to sleep. My body might be stressed from that. We did a pretty big hike. So I could have been, you know, tuckered out or just what's the word I'm looking for? You know, just after some strenuous activity, just
tuckered.
Yeah.
Like in the past, does it happen like mostly at night when you're sleeping?
One time I had a during the day episode. I was actually elk or deer hunting in Montana a couple of years ago. And same thing, I kind of just started going back down the hill and got my mind off it. And by the time I got to the truck, it had gone away. And I ended up actually just driving to a different trailhead going hunting for the evening.
Yeah.
But anyways, twice in one night, and I had had enough. So I've been there multiple times where I'm like, man, I should just go to the doctor right now, go to the hospital, and get it checked out. So I'm sitting here, it's like 2:30 in the morning.
You want to catch it. You want to catch it where the doctor can actually see.
Right.
Because you couldn't even tell. You were even entertaining the idea that it's just something that exists in your head.
Yeah, right, because it's so minor, you know? And this, like, after now talking to the cardiologist PA, I can now back that up because she's saying that, like, so, well, we'll get back to that. At 2:30 in the morning, I'm like, yeah, Steve, I kind of feel like I want to go to the hospital. Steve's like, well, let's fucking go. I'm like, all right, let's go. It's about time. So we drive to the nearest hospital.
I proposed the hospital visit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, well.
Yeah, I was just curious to see what's happening to you.
Yeah. But I think I had said that, like, I'm kind of like thinking about, anyways, that's not important.
Yeah, because I just had a morbid curiosity. I just wanted to know.
You wanted to go nap in a hospital chair for a couple hours.
Yeah, it's funny. As I'm sitting there all hooked up to the machines, they're like, yeah, you're all set. If you want your, you know, buddy to come in and hang out with you, that's fine. I'm like, no, he doesn't need to. He's like, yeah, well, he's sleeping out there anyway, so he probably shouldn't wake him up. So, yeah, we go and, you know, they just do the normal checkup and ask me what's up and hook me up to the all the machines that monitor your heart rate. I don't know if they're just a regular monitor is called, but, you know, you get a couple tabs on you, got the little pulse dealy on your finger.
Yep.
They hit me with a saline flush, which I think I've had before, but you know what's really interesting? She's like, yeah, you're going to taste it. Or maybe smell it. I'm like, huh? And she's like telling me as she's doing it, and immediately, like, my mouth is full of salt. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, it happens. Can't explain.
And they gave you some Ativan.
Yeah, so, well, they also hit me with some liquids. And then it was good because the symptoms kept going. So they were able to see it on the monitor. They set me up with the EKG, which is basically just like the next level of heart monitor. So now instead of having like two things attached to you, you've got 10, you know, instead of tentacles coming all off of you. And before they gave me the Ativan, I'm like, but you don't want to do that, do you? Because it's going to mellow me out and the symptoms will probably go away. She's like, nope, no, it won't do it. So it's just like in your head.
Yeah. It just helps chill you out as you're thinking that you're dying.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah. Which was odd because I'm normally having like a very nervous reaction to the symptoms, and to have the symptoms happening and in my head just being like, yeah, whatever, heart flutter, no big deal.
I know that medication because when my old man was dying, hospice gave us liquid Ativan and liquid morphine to put with an eyedropper into his mouth when he was struggling for air. So I was familiar with that Ativan when he told me that story.
So,
and they diagnosed you with something. Called
three things.
Three possible things.
Well, two for sure, one possible. Later, when I talked to the cardiology PA, she said that on my EKG report, she didn't actually see the SVT, which is the acronym for supraventricular tachycardia. But she did see the palpitations and premature atrial contractions. What she also said, which is interesting, which backs up my thought earlier, my hypothesis that I had that it could have just been in my head. She's like, in most rooms, 9 out of 10 people have palpitations and premature atrial contractions and basically like fluttering or extra beats or missed beats, but they might only happen once a day or once a month or once a year, or they could be just like so slight that the person never notices it. So she's like, it's quite common, but most people just aren't noticing that it's happening to them. You just, when it happens to you, you just happen to be very acute to that sense, and you know immediately what's going on. It wakes you up in the middle of the night. She also thinks that I might have shortness of breath. They kept asking about altitude, you know, which would cause sometimes shortness of breath.
Yeah, well, Belize is zero.
Belize is zero. That's right. And I live at 5. We're only at, you know, 6 or 7 now. So yeah, I mean we don't know exactly what's up. Now, oh, she said that I do not have the SVT, or at least she didn't see that. So she recommends that I go see the cardiologist. So I'm hoping to have an appointment next week in Bozeman.
But
see what's up.
She did tell you no more hiking.
Oh,
around.
Yeah, yeah. I was hoping to
tell. Here's the weird part, because the paperwork says that lifestyle changes are a good idea. And it says to exercise.
Oh, right, yeah.
But then they tell Yanni, so they give him a piece of paper that says exercise, but tell him don't do anything.
Yeah, it's funny, man, because it's like it's always like that in the hospital, because you look around and most other people don't look like you. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm no, like, you know, podium athlete, but I just,
yeah,
like,
you're not like Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, I try to.
Didn't his heart explode or something?
I do my part in trying to keep myself healthy. And
you're very healthy.
When you're in the hospital, a lot of times you're surrounded by people that aren't that healthy.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing 2 nights ago. And so I think this paperwork is sort of written most of the time for the average person.
Because the paperwork's like, what the hell? A little exercise is not, whatever yeah. you're here for, it's not going to hurt.
Yeah, it's going to help, you know, help you out to walk around a little bit more, whatever.
So, yeah, so the morning hunt is blown.
Morning hunt's done. Yeah, because we come back and we're sleeping when we should be hungry.
And they've told Yanni now that until he finds out what's actually going on with his heart.
Be sure to stay well hydrated, rest, no strenuous activity. So when I was talking to the cardiology gal, the PA, I'm like, what exactly is no strenuous activity? Because we got this hunt plan. It's going to be, you know, 3 to 4 miles, couple thousand feet elevation.
Carrying a big old buck back down in the backpack.
Hopefully.
Define strenuous.
She's like, probably not, you know, not a good idea. You need to go figure out what it is. So we can leave it at this. She thinks that it's most likely benign, and then I just have the flutter like everybody else has, and I just feel it more, and most likely a cardiologist is going to give me some sort of a drug that, so when I have these sort of episodes, I can take this drug that will basically like smack my heart and knock it out.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like a pill form of a defibrillator.
So that's kind of what it sounds like.
That's one word.
And
I
again,
say.
All you doctors and nurses don't need to write in about it. I'm sure I'm not saying exactly. This isn't verbatim from what she told me, but I will. We'll check back in on this. But I'm gonna go get checked out.
There's two words I struggle with: superfluous, which I just said that time, but sometimes I can't. That means like more than necessary. And then what's the thing they zap your heart with?
Defibrillator.
That word is hard for me to say. So the morning hunt is shot.
And bagel. You have a hard time with bagel.
Yeah, dude. I just avoid it. I say like you know, you get one of them round doughy deals, you know.
Yeah. Starts with a B.
You put cream cheese on them. So
you were waffling on your plan at that point.
Well, yes, I was. Because we'd spent so much time on Yanni's little health scare that I didn't know if I really had, I don't know if I had time to get up into the zone.
Right.
But, and I'm.
Into the zone and set camp up.
Or get up in the zone and have like a reasonable evening hunt and then a reasonable morning hunt. And after much vacillation and trying to cajole Brody into joining me on my hunt, but I was springing on him a little too soon for him to make proper plans, with family and work issues and all that. So I finally pull my shit together enough where I'm like, okay, and rush in and pack up my overnight gear. And Yanni drops me back at the trailhead, and I got my overnight gear, and I want to get up in the zone, and I start hiking up. And the whole time I'm following lots of horse tracks overlaid with two sets of boot tracks that were not there the night before. So I'm feeling like enormous amounts of stress that there's a bunch of mugs up in the zone. And I'm assuming like horse hunters are out and boot hunters are out. And I'm like three quarters of the way up to the zone, and I find out who the boots belong to. I run into a couple old hippies who are out hiking.
Describe, I want to hear what two old hippies are to you. Describe them.
Like bearded dudes or?
With like bandanas around their heads? Like Willie Nelson?
One had a Hawaii-themed baseball hat. Blue with palm trees and suns on it and stuff. Like a Hawaii, like a hat that I wouldn't have the personality to support.
Mm-hmm.
A Hawaii-themed baseball hat, an orange vest, and one had a orange bandana tied around his head with hair, you know, long hair and a beard. Like, are you saying that I don't know an old hippie when I see one?
No, of course. Of course you like, do, but like, I just get a kick out of it.
Like, because when I say old hippie, I would mean that, like, a guy who is in the counterculture
right.
at the time when being in the counterculture was countercultural.
Mm.
So, like,
he was in his 20s in the 60s.
Yes. Okay. And that, if you embraced that lifestyle at that time, apparently it's very hard to shake. And you carry with you visual cues into old manness that key me to that. And also, you can't shake the lineup of the age.
Right.
So you were in your teens. In the late 60s, and these things click, and I look, and I'm like, I don't think you were a big conservative in the late 60s. I feel like you were left of center in the late 60s and doing drugs. That was my read on these fellas.
Were they smiling and cheery?
No, but they were talking real loud. So I was planning, I was hiking up, listening to them up ahead of me and thinking they're hunters, and I'm thinking, like, is it okay for me to say that you are BAH, bad at hunting. And should I say, hey, fellas, just generally keep it down. But I get up, and it's just two dudes out enjoying enjoying being alive in America on a hike.
And it was a beautiful afternoon.
It was. And he says to me, is it hunting season? And I said, yeah. And he goes, are you sure? And I said, yeah. And he goes, good thing I wore this orange. They said, I got a friend one time, hunted all day, and it wasn't even hunting season. Didn't know until he got home at night. Then he said, it's good to see someone out hiking without horses. And I said, yeah, we do a lot of walking. And the other guy goes, well, even if you do have horses, you still got to hike a lot if you're hunting. And with that, we bid our farewells, and they went down the mountain.
Well, it was nice to, I mean, no negative input whatsoever. Nice guys.
No, I'm glad I ran into him.
Yeah.
Glad I ran into him. Just like, just a regular old Colorado hunt.
Yeah.
I feel like that age hippie, because there's newer, younger hippies. You know, they might not have been, they weren't in their teens in the 60s, but you know who I'm talking about. But I feel like that era of hippie is not anti-hunting.
No. These were guys that were hunting, probably. Because.
Or whose relatives were or whatever.
The old kind of, that, like the old kind of hippie. Now, okay, I have relatives that were hippies. And they lived in teepees and ate porcupines and stuff. They shot with longbows.
Yeah.
Because there was like back to the land. There was like a back to the land element to being a hippie. And also you get a commune, you raise chickens and pigs.
Right.
The animal rights movement didn't really take hold till a little bit later. You know, with Pete Singer.
Well, yeah, we recently learned that it was almost an offshoot of
the civil rights.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't, when I see an old hippie, I don't go like, oh, this guy doesn't like hunting. I mean, some bitch probably used to, as far as I know, used to hunt, likes to hike. Wasn't He's not so avid that he keeps track of when's hunting season or not.
No, but they like the connection to the land.
Yeah, they like the connection to the
land. I'd rather see those guys than some damn mountain biker or something like that.
Hell yeah. Of course. I'd rather see those
mountain bikers. That's Brody Henderson speaking. I love mountain bikers. I do too, but I don't them on hunting trails.
I would rather run into non-hunting old hippies on the trail than dudes who are out pounding the ground with high-end optics finding all the bucks.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, mountain bikers.
I was relieved to find out. The last thing I wanted was it turn out to be like two young whippersnappers out there like pounding the ground. I'd be like, oh man, I got to deal with these guys. So
are you old? You are old enough to call young hunters whippersnappers now?
No. No. But you know what I'm saying, right?
I do.
Just to get back to my point. All the time I'm behind boot tracks thinking that I need to overtake or whatever, that I'm on tainted ground that's already been hunted.
It was the rage building?
No, I just was real eager to find out. I was eager to see when their tracks split from the trail. Turns out the tracks lead me to a pair of old hippies who are headed back downhill. So then I'm like a little bit excited because I'm getting up into the zone prime time. But our tracks in the other night have been obliterated by uphill horse travelers. So I'm real worried about these horse guys now.
See, that doesn't usually worry me because they're usually going in further than...
Yes, that's what I was banking on. And I find that guys don't do good spot and game from horseback.
No, there's too much other stuff going on.
You're paying attention to other stuff. You got horses. It's an unstable viewing platform, so movement. Just like a guy blasting through on a horse, oftentimes, not this is not general, I mean, this is not true across the board, but just generally speaking, I think of a guy on a horse is potentially missing game.
Well, you got to make sure you're going to stay alive on a horse, which is rule number one.
That's the weird thing I always see. Like, people are paranoid. Like, I always kind of have a little chuckle about people who carry weapons because they're afraid of mountain lions and black bears. But you'll meet guys on a horse who have a pistol, and they're not in Grizz country. Like, and I wish Grizzlies lived everywhere.
Right.
But when you see a guy on a horse with a pistol for Grizz for black bear and mountain lion protection, I'm like, the safest thing for you would be to shoot that horse between the ears. Because what's going to wind up happening is that thing is going to kick you in the head.
Or
maybe not this year, but next year or the year after that. Yeah. You're going to get beat. That horse is going to beat you senseless, man.
Yep.
Horses are dangerous.
Oh, we were hanging out with a guy here.
What's the thing about it? 2 days ago, met a guy here, broke five ribs on his horse.
Yeah, he was all crippled up from
I love horse. I'm not down. I'm just saying, like if I was going to say, like, what's more likely going to injure me in my life, a horse or a lion? Absolutely a horse. So.
But now it's getting on towards the good time.
Prime time. And I get up into the zone. And I get to where we spooked the big bucks.
Timber bucks.
I get to where we spooked them. And I didn't realize quite how close that place was. And even Yanni felt after we spooked them, but it was dark and no one shot at them and the wind wasn't really in their favor. I don't think they spooked.
They were just surprised.
I think we bumped them.
Yeah.
And Yanni was even saying, I wouldn't be surprised if those bucks. He was steering me to go to that exact and watch the sage flat they were by. I didn't like that plan. But it just gives you an idea that Yanni's take on it was that buck isn't, he didn't leave the county.
But you also needed to camp somewhere.
Yeah, I could have slept anywhere.
Yeah.
But Yanni's like, he's like, the buck didn't like move to Wyoming or something. No. Like, he's around. And I get up to the big queen mother, what we're going to call the meadow. And the horse tracks are still going, no sign of any horses anywhere. And they could have been anywhere all day long. And I get to the big meadow, and I got maybe 15, 20 minutes of legal shooting light left. And I ponder the idea that I would still hunt the edge and reject that because it just seems a little bit like I'm going to spook game, that I might want to be there in the morning. And I ponder the idea also of going over and looking off the pier and ledge where we watched the guy who took a poke the day before with his rifle, but decide instead to go into a little stand of timber that's kind of like an island out in the middle of the queen mother of all sage meadows. And I'm going to set up there. So I get up to where I'm going to be, and I even make a plan that I'm going to get my tripod out and set my shooting V up on the tripod, and I'm just going to sit for 20 minutes this meadow to see what all is going on. But I'm getting cold because I got all sweaty climbing up the hill. So I kind of hunker in, First thing I do is I glass everything around me. It's like nothing there. And I kind of get down, I'm digging around my backpack. I'm going to change my, add some layers. And I even got my pants, my belt's open, my pants are undone, because I'm thinking I'm going to add a couple things and tuck them, add a shirt and tuck it into my pants and get all cozy for the evening six. It's getting cold. And I'm in the middle of this, I look up, and all of a sudden now, where nothing was a minute ago, is a very nice, a big old buck, 100-plus yards going directly away from me. He'd come out of this little finger of aspens and was going away from me. And without even fixing my pants, I just raise my rifle and lean it on a tree. And this thing is just walking, 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 and showing no sign of like doing anything other than he's grabbing a bite now and then, I think, of grass. But he's not even kind of turning. He's just going dead away from me. And I think like I'm going to have to follow him and try to veer side to get a broadside shot, because I wasn't going to take a shot, the going away shot on him. But then I'm like, no, because the minute I step clear of this timber, he's just gone. Like, face me or not face me, he's going to just sense my presence. So, I don't have buck fever yet, I don't think. But in a panic.
You had decided you wanted him, though, right?
Yeah, like nothing you've ever wanted in your life. Because when I threw my scope up, I knew I could just see the frame. And when I threw my scope up, I could see all these extra points sticking out of the points. And little
that usually does it for most guys.
Little teeny bucks.
Because
little,
what'd you say? Yeah.
Little teeny bucks don't have little teeny points sticking out of their points generally. If you see a big frame and it's got little teeny stickers, as they say, which is a term I do not like.
Extras.
People bling, call it trash, junk. But that would mean it's stuff you don't want. Like you don't want garbage, right? You get rid of it. I want these things. Badly, I've decided to call them gold, little golds, and I wanted to shoot him real bad. So I say to him, to the buck, I say, hey, and it works like a charm, kind of. He doesn't spin. I'm thinking in a perfect world, he's going to stop and spin broadside. But what he does is he looks back and turns enough, and this is the point where buck fever happens. I now officially have buck fever because he turns slightly and I think to myself, oh, you can sneak one in there. Like I got enough exposure where I could sneak one in there.
That last rib.
And blouch! And the deer humps up, like jumps humped up and kicks.
Like a hard shot.
That's what I think happened. I think you're in the... I think I put one in the boiler room. Because when you hit a deer in the heart, it humps up. If you hit him too far back, he slumps down. If you see a deer arch like a cat, what's that move in yoga? Not downward dog, but upward.
It is cat-cow.
Cow, cat-cow? If you see a deer do like a yoga move where you arch your back up, like or like a cat hunches back up fast, he's hit good. He does a thing that says to me, after a lifetime of watching such things occur, it says to me that he's hit good. And he turns at a 90-degree angle. He's like 170 yards out, spins at a 90-degree and starts just hauling ass across me now, broadside. I'm looking at his right side as he's running. And I'm expecting him to tip over. And he's not tipping over, and he's not tipping over, and he's going to vanish into an aspen patch. So thinking I've already hit him, and I'm now dealing with a wounded deer, I swing through him. I come from behind him so that my crosshairs and my scope pass through the center of his body. And just like I'm leading the duck, I pass through and touch that trigger at the end of his neck because he's already wounded. And that way, if you're off on your lead, you have a whole lot of room to be off.
Yeah. At that point, you're just trying to get more.
At that point, just trying to
bullet into him.
Yeah. And bouch! And he just goes down like down.
Like he's been hit in the spine.
Yeah. And I go over there, and sure enough, he's just, like as Ryan Callen would say, deader than a wedge. as Jerry Clower would say, graveyard dead. Just dead. And he's got a hole in his neck, and that thing doesn't have another scratch on him. I totally buck fevered my first shot.
It's weird that he jumped. Like, I wonder why I jumped like that.
Well, you were there. You skinned him.
I know.
There is not a scratch on that deer.
Maybe he felt the breeze of the bullet.
I don't know what it was. I don't know. I would have never, like.
Well, maybe he jumped out of the way of the bullet.
Yes.
He felt the bullet coming.
He could be that. He could be, like, there's a certain bigness and oldness the buck gets where not only does he know to run away, when to run, and when to sneak, but he also knows when to jump out of the way of bullets. I never, in a million years, I would never have taken a full-on run shot at a buck. It's just not something I would do. I'll do it on a wild pig, but I wouldn't do it on, like, a cherished animal that anyone, right? Because the chances of you getting a bad hit are so high. But if you've already wounded it and you got to go find it anyways,
you got,
it's
nothing,
like,
to lose.
Yeah, it's like, you don't then, you don't have, like, ethical, like, you don't, like pursuing wounded game, you don't talk about, like, ethical shots.
Right.
You know, once it's wounded, that stuff's all out the window. Now it's just get it dead. So I don't even deserve the buck.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's a little harsh. So I go over there and there he is dead. And there's no cell phone signal anywhere. I don't have a vehicle because I got dropped off.
But you've got a beautiful sage flat to camp in.
Yeah. So I got the deer. And then there's something in you that always wants you to drag. There's some part of you that always wants to drag shit over to a tree. Like, psychologically. Gutted him out, drug him over to a tree. And I didn't want to leave him there overnight because I thought coyotes would get him. There's a lot of coyote tracks around there. So I weigh all this out in my head. And in the end, and I know that Brody's coming up. Brody had made a plan to meet me up there around 8 a.m. for the day's hunt. So I just make a fire, cook some house, then go to sleep, like, ridiculously early. Like 6:45 or something like that. Yeah. 'Cause that was just, like, dark.
After dark. Yeah.
And I don't want to leave my deer to get eaten. So I just set my tent, like, literally, like, next. Like, if I rolled up to, like, if, like, it'd be like, so I could, like, spoon the deer through the tent wall. And to just kind of want nothing getting at them. Set my alarm for 3:45 a.m. Wake up 3:45 a.m. Make a cup of Via. And run down and actually catch Brody 10 feet from his truck heading up the trail.
6 o'clock in the morning, yeah.
We have a cup of hot cocoa.
You surprised Brody? Who's that guy with the headlight on?
Yeah, because I got up so early, I knew I'd make it back way before it got daylight.
Yeah.
Have a cup of hot cocoa and go back up. And here's the thing. We get back up there, and it's nothing but dudes.
Oh, we were surrounded.
Like, how? I don't understand. And all down in the my beloved Aspen Canyon.
I think they were actually below the, like, they were where it opened up, but yeah, same canyon, just down lower.
It is just like, it reminded me of hunting at Doug Dern's on opening day in Wisconsin.
At least a box of ammo.
Bouch. And no one shoots once.
No, it was three or four or five at a time.
Volleys of shots. And there's three dudes perched up magically, who, like, somehow weren't there the night before. There's three dudes perched up on the big magic meadow.
Yep.
They must have been having a deer drive down there.
I heard one boom, thwap.
Yeah, you could hear the pumpkin strike. But even that guy did a volley.
Yeah.
But then he just shot some more just out of the joy of the general trigger happiness of being an American.
Yeah, I thought those guys, like, herding elk back onto the private or something. For a while, they were shooting so much.
Brody even threw that idea out.
Really?
So there's three guys observing the meadow. Two are kind of together, and one's off on the other side of the meadow.
I just want to explain, too, if it sounds, like, weird to maybe if you're an Easterner listener, that we're, like, so, like, upset about all these shots, because if you're, like, if you're a dude from the other side of the Mississippi, you're like, yeah, it's like opening day or opening 2 days. It's like you hear shooting all the time in the whitetail deer woods. Out west in the greater expanses, it's just simply not like that.
The shooting was so voluminous. Can I use that here? that there's so much shooting going on down there that eventually we get to where the deer's all butchered out, except for just skin in the head. And Brody has to, just out of curiosity, wander over to get to the edge of the canyon to see what's going on down there. All the cracking and blouching.
Yeah.
And I sat up, and so we got all the meat. Like, the meat's all done. All the meat's. Well, we kept. So we had the four legs whole, took the back straps off boneless, took the tenderloins off, just as tenderloins.
Sawed the rib cages.
Saw the rib cage off. So we just hauled out whole rib slabs.
Necros.
Took what of the neck we could, because I'd, you know, done a number on the neck. And then I was skinning the head out. And you know what I was thinking about today is, like, I used to take a multi-tool. Like, when you're skinning a deer's head out, it's hard to skin around the base of the antler. Is that getting this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a truck. No big deal.
So when you're skinning...
Yeah, the pedestal.
Yeah, when you're skinning around the pedestal, it's a bastard. I used to take a multi-tool screwdriver and pry it off there. But on that... Now I used to... Now, like, for my skinning knife, I use, like, a really... And I see you, like, you use a version of this, too. A really, like, stout, short...
Yeah.
The blade.
That Hidden Canyon Benchmade is, like, my new favorite knife.
See, mine's, like, a little bit different
than
that.
It's a shorty.
Yeah, yours is, like, a shorty.
Yeah.
Like, you could stab a dude with yours, and he'd be like, man, what'd you do that for? Like, a very short blade, but it's, like, nice, man.
Yeah, and it's stout, like you said.
Yeah, and
you
I got...
You can pry, you know, ball joints and stuff.
Exactly. With it, yeah. And mine's a little bit longer. It's called a Steep Country. What I like is it's got a blaze orange handle on it, which helps you, because when you go out in deer, you spend half time trying to find
things
your knife.
Things get lost all the
every
time.
Every time you, like, get a leg free, and then you go to, like, take care of the leg and hang it at a tree, and you come back, like, where's my knife? Everybody looks for your knife for a while. So it, like, cuts that down a little by having a blaze orange handle on it. But with that thing, that short, stout, fat, stiff blade, I can just smoke that hide off those antler bases without ruining the blade.
And you can still pry a little without worrying about, like, just blowing your edge right off.
Exactly. You can kind of, like, you don't want to, like, get scraping it against, but it's just, like, a more, it's a sturdier, hardier blade.
Yep.
I like that thing a lot. That's my, like, kind of, like, favorite of the knives they make. But then cut his tongue out, skinned him. You got back. We popped the eyeballs. I had popped one eyeball. Yeah. Popped the second eyeball.
Then we
popped the lower jaw. I told you about the Sika deer I killed that was missing an eye.
Got poked by an antler.
And Brody asked the same question everyone asks. Was his dead eye facing you? And I point out, no, I was dealing with his live eye. I was not getting an unfair advantage.
Yep.
And that was it for chopping that deer up. As we're finally getting done skinning and loading our packs, here comes what looks like a Western movie.
Oh, yeah, man. A string.
In blaze orange. Here comes like seven horsemen and a pack string come by. Don't even give me and Brody the time of day.
No. One little buck on a saddle.
Six hunters.
Well, yeah, no shit. They didn't give you the time of the day. You guys are the assholes in the middle of the Magic Meadow at daylight with a campfire.
But they were coming through like mid morning, and I get the feeling they had probably packed camp up early morning. Like they were way
You want to know my theory is? Well, you're going to say this.
What?
Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
No, I just think they'd gotten up early. Like, I think they were way in past, hunting past where we were.
Mm. No, you know what my theory is? We'll never know. I think they were.
On the other side of the meadow.
I think they were. No, I think they're camped up somewhere. And I think maybe they packed up and rode down, and on the way down decided to do a morning hunt.
Slow.
By the meadow.
The slow roll, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't totally make sense.
But it could have. I mean, there was, seven or eight hunters.
That, I gotta say though, man, if they were rocking like full canvas wall tents, that you'd have to almost be packing all night long to pull that off for the morning.
Didn't
hunt.
Look like they were wall
like, that's
no, it didn't look like they were geared up like that.
When you guys were kids, did they call other tents? You had wall tents and pup tents.
Pup tents, I remember.
Yeah, pup tents were what we call backpacking tents.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought
dome shaped.
Yeah, I feel like they were. I feel that they were hunting light.
Yeah.
So then we just moseyed down the mountain with my big old giant.
Found a couple horseshoes on the way down.
Yeah, found horseshoes. But you know, yeah, Brody kept the lucky horseshoe. And I'm like, you always be able to point to that horseshoe and be like, I tell you who didn't get a buck.
Yep, those guys.
The guy riding them horses. But dude, I'm on like a mule deer streak.
You are.
Is that 3 years in a row?
Yep, nice buck.
I'm just glad because I remember like before last year, so you killed a big buck in Colorado last year. But before that, you were kind of down on Colorado.
Dude, way down.
You had a bad experience.
Because all I knew about was the parts about weird land ownership and tons of mugs. I didn't know about the part about big giant bucks everywhere. Now I'm like, Joe Colorado, I'm going to get a Colorado hat. I'm going to get an orange cowboy hat that says in big, bold letters, like, I heart Colorado on it.
You should.
Dude, I'm a Colorado man.
Yeah. I think that, you know, some people don't hunt here because of the mugs. And that's a, you know.
Yeah, like that's fair.
Yeah. I have friends that are like, look, man, yeah, I know you guys are, you know, killing bucks there. Other people do. I just don't want to deal with that stress of hunting big bucks during an open elk season.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to be fair, like the night you killed the buck, you didn't see a soul, you know?
That's the thing. Yeah. It was like I'd flown in Alaska.
And last year we didn't have a bunch of dudes on top of us. Like if you walk, no,
because you had, because you got a lot of hidey holes.
Yeah, but
here's the thing: I hunt all kinds of places. I hunt places where you couldn't find someone if you had to.
Right.
Okay. So like we hunt areas in Alaska where you fly in and a pilot drops you off, and if you needed to find help, you can't.
Or even Prince of Wales, you're not going to see anybody there. You know,
and I hunt places where it's tons of mugs, but they can't, they're not really messing with you because you're like, you're on Doug's farm and
yeah,
and you know all the neighbors and they're all hunting, but it's like, it's civic, you know, and you kind of like, you got, like, you tell Doug, like, well, I want to go there, and Doug's like, well, I think you should go there, and then you go there, and you know that you have your little spot, right? And if you stay in your spot, you're fine, and there's people around, so there's all these extremes. This is just another, it's just a version. Like, hunting comes in many forms. The hunting pressure comes in many forms. It's just like another kind of hunting pressure.
And I think here it's, you know, a large part of it is being able to buy over-the-counter bull tags in second and third season. Like, there's just going to be a lot of, especially non-resident hunters that are coming just, you know, it's easy for them to get a tag.
Yeah. So if it was that if you're hunting elk, you have to have on an orange cowboy hat.
I think they should wear yellow and we should wear orange.
Just so you know.
Or something.
But I'm telling you, man, I'm fired up.
What do you do if you have both? Like, I like to roll in a lot of times with the OTC bull tag and my buck tag.
Then you got to wear an orange
striped
cowboy hat with a yellow stripe tied around the hat band.
Maybe a big old feather.
If you want to see my huge buck, we'll put it up on the show notes. Lots of meat on a buck like that.
Yeah, a big meat buck.
Big. That's what we were talking about today. Because someone's like, oh, you know, it's terrible.
The bigger the antlers, the more the meat.
Because it's terrible that you'd go out and try to find a big, huge buck when it's all about the meat. But we were observing today that the best way to tell if he's got a ton of meat is to look for big, huge antlers.
Dark ones with extra bling.
Because then you know that he's going to be the size of a cow elk.
Yeah, I mean, 300 pounds easily.
So if I see a big frame with lots of little stickers sticking out of it, I'm like, that is one meaty rascal.
That's a big backstrap and a fatty ham.
Mm-hmm. Big package.
And for those of you out there saying that we don't know what we're talking about, those stinky old ruddy bucks can't be eaten. You got to grind the whole thing. Or if that's what someone told you, all I can say is learn how to cook. Yeah. Learn how to take care of your meat.
We Pepsi challenged last year. We Pepsi challenged a year and a half old meat buck with a big buck. It's like it's such. If you get a buck,
but I think not only that, but you could Pepsi challenge it with an elk or a whitetail or whatever. And this whole like sagey freaking sagey gamey blah blah blah. Yeah.
If you take that buck and when you're stripping the hide off that buck and you find that he's got an inch of fat laid out over his rump,
he's in good shape.
It's like that deer's in good shape and it's going to be good meat. It is the best meat. My wife rarely will flag meat. I could cook like a played out house cat. My wife's not going to like flag it.
Yeah.
She has flagged moose as being like something's peculiar, like something about moose she doesn't like.
Right.
Every time I serve like big, huge muley buck meat to her, she'll comment. She usually doesn't comment at all. She just eats whatever we make. She'll comment on moose as being like something's weird about it. It doesn't like click with her. When I cook like big old buck meat, my wife's always like, "God, this is good."
Yeah,
it's just freaking good.
But and I've shot bull elk in like mid-November and had them like there's just something a little, you know, a little tough, a little off about them that time of year. So it's, you know, and elk's arguably the best, but
yeah, elk has that reputation of being the best, and they don't make a bad tasting elk.
Right,
you can get tough elk,
yeah,
but there's no bad tasting elk. I had a buck, the worst piece of wild meat I ever ate was from a muley buck, but
circumstances.
He slid down the mountain on the snow and landed in a sinkhole.
And boiled in the sinkhole.
And we couldn't get him out of the sinkhole till way later, got him out of the sinkhole. And he was in like very insulated in a little dirt coffin at the bottom of a, you know,
15 and maybe feet. He was alive when he went into the sinkhole.
Well, yes, I know that he was.
Yeah.
And here's what happened. So it was like unbelievably cold. I shot a buck. He slid down the mountain, and I go over to try to find him. I can't find him anywhere. Then I realized it was like a size. Like he fell into a sinkhole the size of a manhole cover. It was kind of hourglass shaped, and I could see down in there. I could see that he was moving a little bit, and so I blouched down in there. And the shockwave of the sound came back and hit my ears so bad. Now my ears are freaking ringing, man. And we're camped down valley from there, and now it's pitch black. I think I got him. Go down. We come up the next day with some ropes and stuff. We peeled off our canoes, like the bow lines of our canoes, and tied them together. My buddy held my ankles and lowered me down in the sinkhole. And I was able to get a lasso around his antler. And then we all got on the rope and dragged the deer up out of the hole and drug up what it looked like if you had... It looked like if you pulled Bob Hope up in his latest years. Like, this thing was like...
covered in mud.
Just, but like, frail. And his muzzle was just gray. And he had the rack, when you know you get a big rack and then your rack shrinks? And it's like different than a... like a rack, a deer's antlers on his way downhill in life are different than on his way uphill. So he could be at the same mat, he could be at the same measurements, but just there's a different quality.
They're like softer, like they like softer edges.
Yeah, it's like a like, different, yeah. like his, he was getting too old. He was still throwing racks off, but they were like bad, old man racks, emaciated and gray muzzled. So he was old and he'd been in the sinkhole all night, insulated with his guts in him. When we started butchering that deer, me and my brother were butchering that deer, and it's the meat smelled bad. And then we started to think that it was getting in our heads, and it wasn't the meat, but it was just like other that it was that the flavor is just like something about the smell of the meat was messing with us. I remember it got so bad at one point that we couldn't tell if we were like really smelling it or not, and we thought that everything just smelled and couldn't tell if like actual part what cuts actually smelled. It got to the point where we were heating up butter in a pan, and one of us went outside to wait outside in fresh air. The other one of us cooked a piece of backstrap in a pan in butter, floated it in butter, cooked it, and took it to the outside person who's now been in a clean atmosphere. That person would eat that buck meat and be like, "That buck meat is bad." Yeah. The only,
by the way, this buck was in good shape.
No, that was the only bad buck meat I've encountered. It happened to come off a mule deer under extreme circumstances. So, yes, if you shoot a buck and then let it rot in the back of your truck.
Yeah.
And then say that mule deer tastes like X, Y, or Z. Okay,
yeah, don't gut it for, you know, a couple extra few hours because pictures are more important.
Yeah, cripple it up so it's
better. Drive it to a spot where you can get a good picture.
Cripple it up so it, like, runs for 45 minutes before you find it.
Yeah.
Then dink around. Don't get the guts out of it. Drive it somewhere else to take a nice picture of it. Hot sun. Sure.
Gonna have to grind it all into sausage.
All right. Thanks for joining.